The Coach Peggy Show. All things wellness with Coach Peggy Wilms. How many people in your life have told you you're half of this or half of that? Are you settling? No more. This show is about all things, and you deserve it. It's about your money, your lifestyle, your beliefs, and even romance. We extinguish excuses and raise the bar to all things possible. It's time to use your ATM, you know, your all things mindset. Welcome to the Coach Peggy Show. Bold, badass, and never half in.
Hey, you guys, hopefully you can hear us and you are out there walking or you are talking or you are driving around in your car. Welcome to the Coach Peggy Show. I am so excited to be here today. If it sounds like I'm super stuffy, it's because I am, because I have some allergies going on. I don't know what else to tell you. Listen, today's show is really, really cool. So as you know, I have all things wellness and we talk about, as you heard, romance, money, nutrition, anything. And today's show, I am super selfish. I just need you to know, because we're talking about cash. We've got the money matchmaker here. I do not want you to hang up because you think that you feel guilty because of how your money's doing, or if you've invested or not, or whether you might be confused. I am not kidding. We're going to dumb it down a little bit and you're going to understand what exactly is going on. So we're going to talk cash. Cha-ching. Okay, listen. Your money affects your health. So you guys, you know, we talk about health and wellness and life and all that that stuff. So I want you to think, it is COVID, one of the toughest years ever with our cash. It's affecting our sleep. It's affecting our stress. I mean, we are, quite frankly, a show. All right. I have a guest, amazing guest here. So my Nick Stuller is here. I'm going to tell you a little bit about him because everybody hates to do their own bios. So I'm just going to read this gorgeous thing about him. Okay. He's the founder and CEO of My Perfect Financial Advisor. He is the premier matchmaker between investors and financial advisors. He's got 30 years doing this, you guys. It is not just yesterday that he got started. He and I both are 32, but you know, we've been doing this a long time. Okay, so he has written a book, The Truth Shall Set Your Wallet Free. And that's what we're going to talk. Nick, I hope you brought your coffee mug or some Jack Daniels or whatever. Welcome to the show. And I'm just going to drink along while you share your
Thank you. I brought my cup, my coffee mug.
I'm loving it. And you know, I want to get started in a little bit of a different way. I want you to tell me what got you interested in the cash. What got you interested in dollars and coins? Was it a mentor you had? Start us off road.
That's a great question. And I don't know if I've ever been asked that question. And you know, I'm 57. And in the 80s, everything was about Wall Street. And I was attracted to Wall Street. And I was a business person by DNA. So the first thing I did, I lived on an island where we grew up, and I went to Wall Street. And so I became a stockbroker, like not in the pejorative sense, as you see in the movies, like Wolf of Wall Street, but you know, we were all cold calling people and selling stocks. And so that was my first initiation into Wall Street. And after like doing this for a couple of years, I realized I'm not a financial advisor. It's not for me, but I love the industry because it's a fascinating history. It's a fascinating industry. And then I started supporting advisors and working with financial advisors. And over 30 years, I got to know a lot about them. But that's how I got my start. Is it was in the 80s, and on the cover of every Forbes magazine and Fortune magazine was this hedge fund guy or this person, you know, on Wall Street, you know, ringing the bell. And I was like, well, you know, I got to go do that. I have a finance degree for, after all, that's what I'm supposed to do. And so I did it for a couple of years. And so I love the industry, but being an advisor, it's just not for me. I'm not an advisor, but I'm an expert on advisors. Much like, you know, if you go to WebMD to learn about, you know, what's the difference between a radiologist, you know, and some other kind of doctor, they'll give you the skinny. And so that's kind of what I've learned how to do over 30 years by working with advisors and institutions. And so That's kind of the short story.
That is so, you know, it's got to be one of those fascinating industries where the hype is there and the mania is there and things are just ching, ching, chinging, you know, back in that day, right? Yeah. You know, if you guys are watching this or watching it on replay, I have a beach background. You might be saying, what? It's like the winter time. But I put the beach background because I want Nick to, you guys can have your dreams. You do not have to be rich and famous to live wherever it is. It mountains, the beach, whatever. But what Nick's going to do is talk to us. You've got millennials out there listening, my clients. Nick, you know what I've never seen before in my whole career? Obviously COVID. Obviously we have hybrid family. You know, the parents, some are home, some are working out of the house, some are working home, some are home full time. Then all of a sudden their husband or partner is home full time. Yeah. Their kid. It's like the most stress ever when, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but money's a big stressor without what's going on right now with relationships. So I kind of want to just, first of all, you mentioned something about the Wolf of Wall Street. I want to just ask you a quick question. What did the movie get right? And what did it get wrong when we think about?
I'll give you a quick answer to both, and then I'll fill in the details for like a minute. So what they got right was there were people that were utter scum of the earth, horrible human beings that ripped people off. That happened. And that's what they got right. And some of the details of what they did in the craziness, you know, I never worked in a firm like that. I literally worked two blocks on, well, I worked, my first office was at 14 Wall Street, right across from the New York Stock Exchange. Down the street was a firm now out of business called D.H. Blair. They were just like Wolf of Wall Street. So those firms did exist. What they got wrong, or in my opinion, what they should have done at the end of the movie, is said the following. This is a real life depiction of what happened. However, it's a statistical anomaly. It was an anomaly back then in the 80s. They were out there. Mm-hmm. People talked about it when you're having, you know, drinks in Battery Park or in Pier 17, you know, and you look down your nose at people like that.
Right.
And we're envious that a 22-year-old was driving a Ferrari, but you knew they were breaking the law. So you knew about it. But back then, that activity was a statistical anomaly. And the big punchline and why I wrote the book 2 years ago and why I came out with this company is the statistical incidences, where's the camera, of these things happening have dropped like a rock. I'm going the wrong way. Dropped like a rock. Today, you know, you can always find bad in any industry. The amount of wrongdoing today is nothing like it was back when I was a rookie. The problem is that no one knows that. It's not written about hardly at all.
Right.
You only read about the Wolf of Wall Street, about Madoff, the mini Madoff on Long Island. There's a zillion stories. You read about the negative. You never read about the success story of the advisor that convinced the family to get life insurance. Dad died 2 years later. Horrible, but the family was saved. Or about, you know, the advisor that talked someone out of investing in Madoff. Or the advisor that said, do not invest in stocks. You got 80 grand in student debt. Are you crazy? You're paying rates that are higher than the markets are returning. You're losing. You shouldn't be. You know, those kinds of stories you don't hear. Once in a blue moon, they write about it, but you hear more of the negative, very little of the positive. So what people take away from that void of voice in the media is you got to be careful with advisors are out to rip you off.
Exactly.
And that's not the case. It's a statistical minority, a small minority of advisors. And they're not that difficult to vet out. You know, if you're unlucky enough to bump into a Madoff who was a genius in his own sick way, sometimes those guys are extremely hard to catch, but you always can catch them and prevent it. You can. There are mechanical ways, actually making a phone call, and I can talk about this, how simple it is to find out if you're currently being hoodwinked. But they're very good con men. And so they can be, they don't have the markings and the trappings of kind of the slick operator that in the back of your mind can give you that kind of, you know, the hair goes up.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, that's, you know, so yeah, the movie was great. I loved the movie. It was terrific entertainment. I wish at the end they said this was anomalous activity and does not reflect the industry.
See, you know, I read something, I read your book, and I read the section that I thought was fascinating because I started to think about my industry. So when you're looking for a crook, you know, in a business, you can go to the Better Business Bureau, see who's out there, see if they're felon, you know, whatever, make a decision. When you're trying to find a primary care physician, you know, you might have some words of mouth, you kind of might check out and Google who's closest, whatever. In my industry, health coach, wellness, life coach, there are 43 and a half gazillion of them, right? Millions of them right now, Jesus. And there's no database. I mean, the advisor database that you can find a good guy, bad guy, good woman. I didn't even know it existed until I read your book. Like, seriously, you can figure out. And the other thing I just wanted to say that you had said I wanted to capitalize on is talk to the advisor personally versus the one marketing for the advisor, the salesy person for the advisor. I mean, get that relationship kind of going, right? So talk to me just about, let's back up first. And I want to ask you, why are we so damn afraid to talk about money? Like, there's so much shame and guilt. Like, my business isn't making enough. Or the kids are like, I can't do a 401k. I'm trying to buy ramen noodles here. What's the issue?
There are a lot of books that have been written about behavioral finance and shame, and more that are being written as we speak. It's actually a burgeoning, you know, subspecialty in wealth management, financial planning, financial advice, whatever the moniker you use. So there's a number of reasons, and there's something that I think is more prevalent in the U.S. It's just a psychological thing that you don't, it's basic human psychology. You don't want to tell anyone. It's almost like an animal. You don't want to walk up to an animal in the kingdom and say, by the way, I'm limping, my leg is wounded. If you come at me the right angle, you're going to kill me really fast. You don't tell people that. Kind of the same animal instinct with people. You don't say, hi, good morning, nice to meet you. I have $500,000 in debt. My wife's about to leave me, and I made 9 horrible years of market returns. You know, would you like to go out on a second date? Well, you know what I'm saying.
No, I do.
You
make me.
It's just basic psychology. You don't want to open up the kimono. And it's sad because it stops people from getting the help they need. They don't want to admit to themselves that they don't know something. Their shame in lack of knowledge, their shame in the mistakes you made. Nobody loves to look in the mirror and say, good morning, Nick. I just made 9 mistakes in the past week. You know, let's start another great new day. You don't want to admit these things.
Right.
So it's all wrapped up into that. And then on top of that, it's a really complicated topic, wealth management. I mean, talking about life insurance and standard deviations, you know, and alpha and beta, this stuff puts most people to sleep, you know, and
it's so scary too.
And so all those factors combined, people just don't want to talk about it.
It reminds me, and I'm not going to gender bash, but I'm going to make an observation. So when I'm working with male and female clients, there are lots of similarities and there are lots of differences. Yep. One of the biggest differences on getting my male clients to go to their primary care physician, of which if we gather some information, we could probably change their life, get their blood pressure down, their cholesterol, all those fun things. But they'll walk around going, hey, you know, I'm 30 pounds overweight, my blood pressure's up, you know, I know what I got to do. It gives me the same feeling when you talk to me about money, because if you just would share what you don't understand, what you need, and someone figures it out for you, instead of like my males not wanting to go to the doctor because they think they know what they think they know, it just kind of reminds me of the same thing. Because you're right, number one, the terminology that you use scares the bejesus out of me. Because you know why? It scares me because you make me feel like there's something I don't know, therefore you're going to screw me over.
Right.
You know, there's not, and this is, you guys that are listening, this is the thing that I liked about Nick, why I reached out to him, because he doesn't have any partiality towards, he's not an advisor. He's not selling his own company in that manner. He is saying, hey, I've done a lot of research. I'm here for you to figure out how to match make this, whether you have $50 to pay for an advisor or you have $5,000. Seriously, that's what your book is all about too, is that the fact that you're saying, hey, I've looked at this for a really long time and I'm giving you kind of a how-to. I bet the advisors who are trying to take advantage of us don't like your book.
Well, no, they don't, because I make it easy to spot them. And, you know, and just for the listeners, our platform, My Perfect Financial Advisor, is free to consumers. We charge the advisors $995 a year per advisor to be in the platform. So one of the things people always wonder, you know, how are you making money? And there's all kinds of things going on in the economy now where, especially in Wall Street, if those of you that are listening or viewing that know, say, of Schwab and Fidelity, they went to zero commissions for buying and selling stocks. Now, they're making money from other places. It's just not clear. And it's not devious. They're making money from vendors in other places.
Right.
So consumers, when they hear it's free, they like free. But at the same point, they go, oh, wait a second. What's the catch?
Too good to be true, yeah.
You know, are you pushing Fred over Mary to me? And as you and I, when we first spoke, I said, I don't care who you hire. My algorithm does. My algorithm says, based upon the data, you should hire this person because we think they're the best based on the data and the science and the artificial intelligence. So, you know, trust is a huge, huge thing.
It's huge.
And basically, retail Wall Street has a hole to climb out of, which really wasn't dug mostly by them. It was partially, they had a shovel in the hole. There's no question. They helped dig the hole a little bit. But the media, you know, and other, and regulators themselves that make things complicated, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, reasons why people are dubious about advisors. But yeah. But they shouldn't be, because they're transparent these days. And services like mine and regulators can help you understand them fairly quickly.
So let's say let's go through some examples in case anybody's still kind of confused. Let's break this sucker down. So if I'm in my late 20s, and I'm like, oh gosh, I believe Nick, this is great. And I go to your website and I'm like, this is awesome. You produce blank. What's the process that then you get back and go, hey, you found an advisor to kind of meet your needs? Like, what's the process if I'm 28?
Sure. So if you're 20, let's take a really interesting example. You're 28. You literally have no money in the stock market. You make a living. You have some debt.
Yep.
And you have de minimis cash in the bank. That person thinks, oh, I don't need an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you need an advisor more than the millionaire. And here's what, and you do. And I'll explain that in a second. So the way it works is they enter their information, they log in, and then we have a series of questions for them about themselves. We do have some questions about what they want in an advisor. Our very first question is, I have no idea what I want, because most people really don't know what they want.
Amen.
They really don't. No, so. I have no idea. I want a financial plan. I need my money managed, blah, blah, blah. I want to pay for college education. So they answer all these questions. We ask them data about themselves, a lot of data. Then we also ask them to actually submit a writing sample to us. They don't have to write something. Right. We don't want them to write something. We want them to cut and paste something they wrote. It could be anything, to a vendor, you know, a letter to someone you hate, a letter to your mom. It doesn't matter.
Okay.
100 words or more, because our artificial intelligence pulls out their top five personality traits.
Shut the front door.
And that's part of the algorithm. It's not a big part, frankly.
Okay.
But the psychology between using a professional and an advisor is no different. If you are a wild extrovert and your advisor is a wild introvert, guess what's not going to happen? Optimal conversation and dialogue is not going to happen, right? I mean, you don't want to hang out and spill your financial guts.
Little Nick, look at that.
You know? So anyway, that's the process. And then they hit the button, and then we tell them who their advisor is that we think is ideal for them.
Yep.
We give them six alternates that are delivered in order of fit.
Okay.
Because they may call the advisor and they have no chemistry on the phone or who knows what.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And then they have to reach out to the advisor. The most important thing that we're learning, because the system is a year old, And so we're still learning. I know a ton about advisors, but the system's new. So we're learning about how people react to the system. So what we've learned is that people are really reticent to have advisors call them. So we've built the system where they have to take the first step. So you're not a name that's been sold and passed around amongst, 22 advisors who are going to hammer you with emails and calls. You, the consumer, must reach out to the advisor as the first step. And we did that purposely based upon research. And we continue to find consumers like that. So
there's change right away, doesn't it? If they're not, they're not in pre-contemplation if they're making some calls.
Yeah, if they're reaching out, they're serious. And then to put a kind of a bow on it, if you're 28, you have no money in the market, you're in debt, and you only have a little bit of money in the bank, and you think you don't need an advisor, you're dead wrong. Here's why. There's a thing called a financial plan, which does everything about money and examines everything about money with the exception of investing. You need a financial plan. How are you going to get out of debt? Can you get married and have kids yet? Can you afford it? Are you spending too much money in rent? Did you think about long-term care? There's a zillion things that people don't even know to ask.
Right.
I mean, the biggest problem to learning is you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly right. Yeah.
So you need someone to tell you, what are you doing about long-term care? What's long-term care? Do you have a will? And the list goes on and on and on. So if you have no money, everyone needs a financial plan, basically. And so a financial plan will get you on the right track. And the advisor may come out with the plan and say, guess what? Based on your goals, you can't get there. And your goals were just simply mathematically unrealistic.
Right.
So you need to either change the goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or change some other reality, i.e. your expenses, your income, whatever the case may be. And so that's what a good advisor will do, is they'll tell you the truth that, you can't get there based upon the information, based upon the reality of today.
Do you think there's a part of it that they just don't want to know? They think they've, it's so interesting because I'm thinking about the behavior from my side of, what I see. And it's like, we all have enough friends, right? We need to, in business and in with health and wellness, we need to have somebody that's going to tell us what we need to hear, not what we want to hear.
Yeah.
And I love the way you have it set up because it doesn't feel threatening. It doesn't feel like, they can see my face and they're judging me. It's different than, I remember back in the day, just going to date myself, when we'd get a knock on the door and Bud Woodard was our prudential salesperson. And he'd come in and he'd have some coffee and he'd talk to my grandparents about what they needed to do. And I never really knew what Bud Woodard was there for. But, those days obviously are way gone. And we're going to get ready to go to commercial. And then when we come back, of course, you guys, we do a lightning round, something that's super fun. Nick doesn't know anything about anyway. But before we go to break, what would you say the first thing that somebody should do if they're 28, literally to get on the website and just answer the, they're familiar with.
The questions aren't like.
Yeah. They know technology, get on there. It's not threatening in the sense of there's no other step that it's going to go to. That's what I love about this. I know I kind of said that, but even in today's world, when you go out to get a quote for insurance companies, you're like, oh, I want to know, if Obamacare goes away, how much it's going to cost for me a month. And then all of a sudden 13 people are texting you and calling you. It's making us not even want to look at something. But the way you have it set up with you can make the call just feel so less threatening.
Thank you. Well, the point of the company is very simple. We want everyone over the age of 18 to get a financial advisor in one way, shape, or form.
It's amazing.
Because, and I can talk about this later, there are plentiful studies that prove mathematically the benefit of having a financial advisor. And then of course there's hundreds of thousands of anecdotal stories about that. And my family history is one of them. But so we built this company for the consumer. We didn't build this company for the advisor to get them new clients. That's actually kind of the output of serving the investor.
Huge.
We want the investor to get help because even in this day, people are buying high and selling low.
That's right.
and making so many mistakes that are avoidable.
Exactly. I'm so excited to finish this conversation. Okay, David's going to take us to break. You guys don't stay away too long. We'll be right back at you with some more fun moolah stories. The Money Matchmaker. Talk to you in a minute.
All of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download.
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Running the show with thoughts bouncing around your cranium like a jet-propelled ping pong ball, you can't focus or relax. Quieting your mind is key to having a sense of inner peace and to being able to access your inner wisdom. So how can you quiet that racing mind? Just breathe. Sit with eyes closed and breathe in slowly, filling your lungs to capacity. Then gently and fully exhale. Repeat 10 or more times. I assure you, at the end of this exercise, your mind will have slowed and your body relaxed. You'll be better able to access your inner wisdom, guiding your personal evolution to becoming your highest and best self. I'm Carrie Kadambi, and I'd love for you to join me on Transformation Talk Radio for my show, A Spirited Exchange. For more information about me, visit my website, thedivineguidancegift.com.
Powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Welcome back. Welcome back. If you guys are out hiking, you know, I hope you took a little bit of a stretch and drank some water. And if you're driving or watching us back, please listen. We're talking to the Moolah Man, you know, M-U-L-A-H, the Moolah Man. You know, when we were at break, you guys, we were kind of chit-chatting about, he has a fantastic story of a mom who kind of signed up her four kids to see, teach them an example. They've got their shoes, they're spending their money, they're very, not very frugal. And one of the things that we were just saying before we came back was, I mean, we're just not taught how to do a budget. My youngest son, Lord have him not call me after this, he's never written a check. It's okay. You know, never had a checkbook, never written a check, but there's that kind of out of sight, out of mind thing. And, you know, he calls every day to check his balance. Like, seriously, calls the bank. How much money? I'm like, okay, you knew how much money you had yesterday. You just spent $17 on gas. So, hey, you know, what's, so, I mean, we're just not taught the budget thing.
It's crazy because personal finance should be taught starting in grade school. And it should be taught as a core course up until the time you graduate from college.
Amen.
And there's been a number of, and financial education has been talked about, at least in my industry, basically as kind of a failure because people are making the exact same mistakes. But I think the problem is it's not taken seriously from first grade on. I mean, my daughter's five. We have a piggy bank for her. It's a cool piggy bank, and it's got five sections: spend, save, donate, invest, and four. Spend. It's clear, and you can.
Son's piggy banks like that for Christmas. They will just love to hate me. I'm doing that. I've got.
But it's great, and so it's.
I love that. Let's do a lightning round because David Knox is like, Peggy, you said you do that right after commercial and then you always forget you get to run an email. Okay, I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
So I'm thinking about you. You've been in finance. I'm going to make this up. So I've got my beach behind me. I always wanted to be here and I was willing to come down here and be a bartender if I had to because that was my goal. What location, if you had a choice anywhere that you would retire, where would you want to go?
Well, I'll tell you, the place that I've found the most intoxicating and the best place in the country is Belvedere, Tiburon in California.
Do talk.
Oh, I went there. I've only been there twice in my life, but the first time I went there, I was a young sales guy, and Belvedere and Tiburon are right next to each other, next to Sausalito, and it's at the base of mountains. You're facing the bay. You can see the city, and you've got a little bit of everything, and you know, it's just amazing.
The adjectives, the body language. Are you get there, or is it just a dream? Like, seriously, what are your thoughts?
I don't think about it that much because I'm not sure why I don't. I should think about it more. But we're East Coasters. Maybe one day we'll get a place there, you know. Yeah, but it's so expensive. But it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
You could snowbird. Can you snowbird sideways? Yes, you can. Sure.
No, you can go to Tahoe from there. It's an hour flight.
See, let's just do that.
You can drive over the bridge, and you know, when COVID's over, you can get a phenomenal meal and in a phenomenal city. I mean, let's hope they clean up.
Gonna go there. Your daughter's gonna make so much money with her little 5-section piggy bank that she's gonna take care of you. Okay, so let's think. Let's do another lightning round. Okay, if you could have any pet, whether it's a sloth or not, sloths are my favorite. What kind of pet would you have?
Well, I've been told that skunks are magnificent pets. You got to take out the I have a friend who's got a skunk. You got to take out the scent gland when they're like a couple of months old. And I'm not saying I would have one, but I think it would be funny as hell to have one walking around my house, have people coming into the house freak out because they say they're wildly clean, they're very affectionate, they're not destructive, they're just great pets.
Oh my gosh.
You take out the scent gland within a couple of months of being born.
Key point right there.
Yes.
All right. So let's.
But you never had that on your show.
No.
I want a pet skunk.
Kind of quite caught me off guard because most people do know I love sloths. You know, they say your pet kind of similar.
That's an interesting.
Yeah. Kristen Bell is one of my, I'm going to meet her someday. And just, I love her personality and her humor and her, she's so authentic and transparent. Well, it's one of her favorite animals. So
really?
When you brought that thing out and it's hanging and it's so cute, but it really isn't my personality, but that's mine. So, yeah.
It's kind of the antithesis of your personality. You're high energy and fast and.
Crash. You nailed it. All right. So let's talk about this. This database, however people say it. So you are going to gather this information. Everybody comes in. They fill it out, you guys. If you haven't heard this already, you fill it out and the algorithm all dances around and matches you. And Nick comes up with about 6 advisors. And my question is, how do they advisors? So they're part of your panel. You've already vetted them. Is that
correct? Okay. They go through a very strict vetting. Number one, we make sure they are advisors, because there's a tiny number of people that pretend to be advisors. So number one, we validate with the regulators, are they registered? Yes. And there are several regulators that we have to check with. And then we make sure that they have absolutely no negative history in their background, not even a complaint.
That's amazing.
Not an accusation, nothing. They have to have a pristine regulatory history. And then they're allowed to be in the system.
That's amazing. So the system's a year old. You said you wrote the book. Let's see. It was 2018, I think.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago.
So did the system, was that something you always wanted to do, or was it an outcome of the book? Like, how did that process kick in for you to do this?
Great question. So this is my third financial technology company I've either founded or co-founded. So the last one we sold, and once we, in the final weeks of selling it, I was thinking, what am I going to do now? Because I have a lengthy non-compete. And so I decided pretty much in the same day, I want to write this book and I want to create the application. And I was praying to God and hoping the book would come out first, because the book would be a very good tool to help people kind of trust a little bit more in the product once it comes out.
Right.
And thankfully
right.
The book came out first. And so that was the genesis. And I partly, in a small way, wrote the book out of not anger, but kind of out of angst.
I was just going there. here with a long, long no compete, sitting there kind of, how can I just still kind of do what I do?
Well, actually, the book was came from frustration, I should say, from years prior at this company that we sold. We had a PR firm trotting me around. I was the CEO because we had kind of a newfangled kind of piece of software. Anyway, long story short, it was about advisors. Almost every editor and writer I met with, this is in New York City, all the majors, you name a name, I probably, you know, met them courtesy of my PR firm. They couldn't wait to talk about bad advisors. And this is after I told them the reality is only a small percentage have a negative history. And it got me so mad because I'm like, you're only interested in the negative. Mm-hmm. When the statistical majority of advisors do great work, have no issues, but why do you want to talk about the small percentage? I mean, and so that never left me. And so I said, you know what? One day I'm going to write a book that's going to talk about the truth of the industry. Mm-hmm. And I bash a few people in the book. I name a couple of writers. I name a couple of people because they're misinforming their readers. And that was part of the genesis for writing the book. That no one's written an objective book about advisors and no one's come out with an objective database like mine to match whether you're poor or rich with advisors that are, you know, vetted. So anyway, so that's the same day.
This is something that was really, when I started the show, I said I wanted to do this kind of selfishly. And one of the reasons is that your industry reminds me of what's going on kind of in my industry. Bear with me. Because there are so many people trying to do what, you know, everybody's home with COVID. So everybody has a podcast now. Greatest thing. Let's do it. Nothing else to do. Oh, let's go ahead and say we're a coach, but let's not get certified because who cares? It's experience. Okay. And then we have this finance thing all of a sudden. There's a statistic that you share where attorneys are, I believe, at 5%. Physicians are at 7%. I'm trying to think of like bad guys. And financial advisors are like 1%. Seriously, we have more malpractice and more attorneys screwing us over than a financial advisor who's handling your money.
That right. No, you did get it right. But it's funny. At my last company, we were encountering this negative theme and this negative narrative. And so I said, this might be interesting to do. Let's analyze the publicly available disciplinary records of other professionals relative to advisors. So let's look at doctors, let's look at attorneys. It's all publicly available. It's not like, it's not super cerebral stuff. You just grab the data and you analyze it. And it turns out that 7% of all attorneys have been brought up on charges by their state legal board. Mm-hmm. 5% annually, every year, 7% of all attorneys have some formal charge brought against them with their state law board. 5% of all doctors get sued annually. And this data comes from the American Bar Association and the American Medical Association. And that's annually. Since the regulators have been tracking disciplinary history about advisors, which is 40 years. To date, the total number is 7% since the 40 years ago. Wow. And every year it's under 1%, the total number of advisors that got brought up on some charges. Now, a skeptic or a cynic would say, well, you know, the industry is protecting itself. That could theoretically, the advice industry could be protecting itself and underreporting stats. Here's the problem with that theory, because I've had a reporter say that to me. In the securities industry, there's 5 regulators, not one, there's 5.
That's a good point.
There's the state, there's the SEC, there's FINRA, there's insurance commissioners, there's banks. Not all of them are regulated by all 5, but many of them are regulated by 3 or 4. Mm. Plus, here's another thing that people don't realize because it's inside baseball. At every advisory firm, there's basically an internal affairs cop called a chief compliance officer.
Yeah.
And his or her job is to stop you from doing wrong things and also catch the bad guys in your firm. At the biggest firms, they have dozens and hundreds of compliance officers. No such role exists in law or medicine. So the odds of the regulators and the industry itself catching bad actors is higher because there's more people looking for it.
Exactly.
And despite that, there's still a much lower disciplinary rate, you know. And look, it's not a perfect analogy, but it's pretty good.
I was going to say, what other industry has five regulators? And, you know, even with health insurance, I mean, the compliance is there. And, you know, if you're nervous about what's going on, you have some sort of compliance person just to make sure you're. I have a question, because that's what I do, I guess. So I don't know why I prefaced that. So let's think about, you're writing your book again, magic wand, boom.
Yep.
And you have to go, you know what you know now, what would you add in it or put in it? What theory, what story, whatever, what would you do?
Well, actually, I've already started drafting the next version. And I intend to do it every 2 or 3 years because the industry changes and we're also going to learn a lot from the people using, both reading the book and using the app. So the first thing I would do is I would include the stories, many of them, of the investors who have since hired an advisor, either through my app or just at a sample.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to, because I interview a number of consumers and investors in the book and just ask them about their experience with advisors. But this time I'll add to those stories saying, okay, you changed advisors or you hired a new advisor for the first time ever. Because only 30% of people have an advisor in this country. Can you imagine if only 30% of people went to a doctor ever?
Eight.
It's a problem.
Fascinating statistic.
I mean, you know, you need, there are certain professions you really need, and I believe everyone needs, and they can get an advisor. So that's what I would do. I would add these stories about your journey in either changing advisors or hiring a new one. So I'd add that. I would talk about cryptocurrency and Bitcoin because it's this.
What?
It's this.
Like, I don't even know what to tell you. So I get all this Bitcoin stuff. I'm going, oh my gosh, that must be some sort of gaming thing. I'm going to have to get a couch and sit down. I don't know what it is. I'm in Vegas and I'm going to give up my money and they're going to get into my finances and rabbit hole me everywhere. Like, what? I'm sorry, you guys. I don't know this. What is Bitcoin?
Sure. I'm not an expert, but I know enough to be dangerous. And in preparation for tonight, I read for the first time ever the original Bitcoin white paper, an 8-page paper by the guy who invented Bitcoin, a very famous venture capitalist, a guy named Fred Wilson, who's a believer in cryptocurrency. And I'm a skeptic, personally, me.
Okay, let's go. Yep.
I'm okay. Waiting. Bitcoin is an alternate currency to a dollar bill. Instead of using a dollar bill or a 20 or your credit card, you can use Bitcoin. It's a digital currency that resides in the ether on a server. And I read the position paper, and I can't claim to understand it all because it's fairly technical. But basically, the guy who invented Bitcoin says there's a need out there to pay people with something other than a dollar bill or a credit card, because if you want to give somebody $4, you can either give it in cash, but if you want to give someone $4 that's 2,000 miles away, there's going to be a hefty transaction charge to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's invent something digital that's safe. That is one of his first statements of purpose of what a cryptocurrency, namely his invention, Bitcoin, would do. And then other really smart people have said there are other utilities, like if you're in Africa and there are no banks, just like if you think about certain parts of the world, they had cell phones before they had landlines. Certain parts of the world don't have telephone poles and wires.
Yep.
Their first phone was a cell phone. So there is a utility for digital currencies, but I think it's become an absolute mania. I think people investing, I mean, it's just, and I'm kind of, I'm older, so I tend to be a little more conservative. Warren Buffett was on TV. Everybody knows who Warren Buffett is, right?
That's so funny that you bring that up, because my David, that, you know, I start every single show with a quote. And this is going to show you how serendipitous that we're supposed to be together. So I start every single show with a quote, and David's going to probably try to find it to put it up. Here is my quote for tonight. If you do not find a way to make money while you sleep, you will work until you die. Warren Buffett.
Oh, I mean, the guy.
Right.
Well, and here's what I saw. Warren Buffett was on CNBC a few months ago, and they said, Warren, what do you think about cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin? He said, he goes, I don't get it. What if I create Warren's coin today?
He's so brilliant.
There's no barrier to create your own.
And you know,
crypto.
People get into that because they trust his brand. Well, Dave,
he's a wildly intelligent guy. Anyway, but well, that's it's yeah.
David, instead of taking us to commercial, can you hop on here? I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
My lovely producer. Okay, Bitcoin. You know what that is, don't you?
Yes, I do. Unfortunately.
Oh God, Lord have mercy.
Unfortunately.
So what's your experience? Why did you do it?
I didn't do it. A lot of my friends did. And then I heard a lot of YouTubers, which is kind of my generation, like the get rich quick scheme is to go on YouTube. A lot of them got famous and got their money through investing in Bitcoin. And so a lot of the influencers that we have, Instagram, YouTube, whatever social media platform that they have, a lot of them became famous and have their money and got their mansions and their cars because of Bitcoin.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I just can't. It's like Pac-Man on overdrive or something. It just feels like such a game to me. It just feels like Candy Crush on overload.
I mean, I've never understood personally. I've never had a problem with using dollar bills or credit cards to buy stuff. I mean, where's the problem there? So if you want to transfer money internationally, a lot of it, which I've never done, yes, there's a hefty transaction cost.
Yes, there is.
If you're in Gambia in Africa and there are no banks for 3,000 miles,
bucks.
Maybe a cryptocurrency is a good solution. But mm-hmm. In the U.S., I've never seen, you know, a purpose every day for this stuff.
Yeah.
Outside of those very nuanced, you know.
It's amazing because I bet every single day I get somebody hitting me up in my messenger on Facebook for it to the point where it's like and honestly, I'm being dumb. I mean, I never even researched it. I didn't think it was like a real thing. So thank you ever so much. As we head into fad or for real, so you guys who watch me and you kind of know what this deal is. So usually what I do is I talk about some sort of fitness equipment or it might be some, you know, nutrition plan or some pill to swallow or whatever. And I give you my personal opinion on whether I think it's a fad or whether I think it's a real thing. So I'm keeping Nick on because I'm not even going to use my gavel tonight to you guys to find a for real. I want to have Nick talk to us about a fad. Like what, I guess Bitcoin's a fad, but in your personal opinion, with any stories that you have, what is something that you feel is just like a BS fad when it comes to cash?
Well, that's a good question. So a BS fad when it comes to investing in money. I think cryptocurrencies in general, I want to be clear with my words.
Right.
As an investment.
Okay.
Is a complete fad and a total farce. Because I go back to, I'm a simple guy and I've done relatively well in my life. I'm college educated. I've started two other companies, worked on Wall Street my whole life. I'm not the most sophisticated guy on the planet. I'm no nuclear engineer. I'm fairly intelligent. I have been thinking about this ever since Bitcoin came out. I don't see a purpose to any cryptocurrency absent those very discrete minor utilities. Here's where it becomes a real problem for people. If you lose access to your Bitcoin, you've lost your money permanently. Now, if I lose a $20 bill on the street, I suck that up. I don't carry around 20 grand in cash. If JP Morgan loses my 20 grand in cash, guess what? JP Morgan's giving me my 20 grand back.
That's what I was just thinking.
End of story.
Yeah.
So to invest in a cryptocurrency is not investing. Mm-hmm. It is pure tulip bulb speculation in something that probably has no underlying utility because life goes on without it. You don't need, it doesn't, you know, it just doesn't serve. And so I think cryptocurrencies, again, I make these caveats a lot when I'm making a statement, absent the use case of underdeveloped country, whatever. Because Bitcoin is, it hit an all-time high. I think it's, what, I forget what it is, $30,000 for one Bitcoin. It started out at pennies. So, you know, your producer's right. They're minted millionaires. Here's the problem. It's like musical chairs. Someone's going to be holding the bag.
Yeah.
Who bought it at $31,000. And it gravitates, it goes wildly. And I know people that have made a lot of money with Bitcoin. But my fear for people, my advice when people ask me, never invest in Bitcoin. It's not an investment. It's a wild speculation.
It's a good point.
And it's like investing in a company that makes nothing.
Yep.
You hope just to sell it to somebody else at some point. And, yep. You know, that's kind of been my view, which is largely influenced by Warren Buffett, by the way.
Yeah. I got to research that dude. I mean, obviously, it's not my industry, my lane, but that's definitely.
Yeah, he's one of the.
Did you hear out that? Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong. All right, so while we finish this up, I want you to tell me what is one of the most common questions that you get, whether on the street, whether you're at a dinner table, what is this?
Yeah, well, the common statement I get, when I tell people what I do, it's very funny. They immediately get defensive, almost everybody.
Agreed.
Because most people don't have an advisor. And they go, oh, I don't have a month. I mean, I never ask people, hey, do you have an advisor? I'm a sales guy, and I know the best way to sell is not to hit people over the head with, you know, a sales pitch.
Right.
So all I do is I say, I run a company that matches people together and, you know, to an advisor. And people immediately say, oh, well, I don't need an advisor. I'm great. And, oh, I don't need one. I don't have enough money. And so it's, I don't have enough money, or I think I don't have enough money. I'm smarter than any advisor, or advisors are crooks. Those are the three things people think most of the time when they think of advisors. And all three of those are incorrect statements and thoughts to have. And it's an enormity of research to back that up. That's done by really well-known trusted organizations and all that stuff.
Amazing. So, I can see that would be the most common statement or reaction that you would see. What would you give? We have a couple more minutes. Tell us tell everybody where they can find you, of course. And then the second thing, is there a quick call to action you'd give everybody listening?
Yeah, so it's www.myperfectfinancialadvisor.com. I tried to think of a longer name for the company. I couldn't think of one.
I love it. Put it in the comment section too, so we'll make sure that everybody sees.
And the call to action is just go on the site, register, and get matched to an advisor. And, you know, you can email us, you know, there's an email address on our website. If you see these advisors and you literally don't know or even know what you're looking at, we'll respond to you and help you out to educate you, you know, on via email or even a phone call. But just go on the site, register. Nobody sees your data. The advisor doesn't see your data. The advisor doesn't get your phone number, your email. No one's going to call you. You have to take the first step.
I love it. Nix, thank you so much for being on the show. I'll make sure that they have the link on the comment section of the show that airs tonight. And you guys, I just want to give you a quick reminder of how important it is to think about money and the stress level it causes and how it affects your relationships and even your nutrition. I mean, IBS is probably driven most of the time by dairy and money, I swear to God. All right, you guys, you can catch me every single Monday, actually every other Monday now, Eastern Standard Time, 6 here for the Coach Peggy Show. And then I have happy hours every Monday on Facebook that is live at, that one is what, 8 Eastern Time. So stay tuned. I will tell you what the guest is coming up in the next 2 weeks. I'm so glad that you came and visited Nick and myself. And you guys have a great week. I love you, mean it. And we'll talk really soon. Bye, Nick.
You've been listening to the Coach Peggy Show. All things wellness with Coach Peggy Wilms. Tune in live the first and third Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where Coach Peggy talks all things wellness, not just nutrition and fitness, but about all things, about your money, your lifestyle, your beliefs, and even romance. The Coach Peggy Show, bold, badass, and never half in. For more information or to connect with Coach Peggy, visit allthingswellness.com.